Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, those of you who listen to Who's Talking regularly know that my favorite political advisors are Gary Pierce and Carter Wren over in Raleigh, two of the state's most experienced and wisest political consultants coming from opposite sides of the political street. They cheerfully share their differing views, usually, and sometimes the same views, on their website, talkingaboutpolitics.com. And they've agreed to come and instruct me in sort of basic political science, as they do from time to time. And we do it. So Carter Wren and Gary Pierce, welcome.
Thank you.
I mean, you just have to agree that this is an interesting time politically for North Carolina. You may not like it, or you may think it's great, but you whatever it is, we're learning some things about it. And so, Gary, what are Democrats learning?
Well, you know, you're right about it being interesting. I never have a shortage of material for the blog. Just get up every morning, and what makes me maddest, I write. Or what I think will make Carter's friends the maddest, I guess, you know. I mean, obviously, the really interesting thing is what's going on in Raleigh today. I mean, we have a leadership that's taken the state in a very different direction from really anything North Carolina's seen in a long time. Democrats are upset about that. You know, thousands of them go down on Moral Monday and protest, and hundreds of them get arrested, and folks on Carter's side feel just as strongly. They've, you know, started doing their own protest on Tuesday. So it's a time really of profound change in the state, and we can argue a lot about, you know, what the long-term consequences are going to be. Yeah. But if you love politics, you got to be fascinated.
Gary, you, of course, were partner with former Governor Jim Hunt, and you all took charge of the state twice. A lot of people at that time felt, my golly, these are energetic people. They're pushing through their program. But in all fairness, I mean, Governor Hunt was very powerful politically, very ambitious, and very determined to get things done. But he was never able to push through this dramatic a change. I mean, never even aspired to do it, did he?
No, and I guess part of that is you have a pent-up demand, really, on the Republican side. They've been in the minority in the legislature for so long. I mean, they have had the governor's office for 12 years out of the last 40 or whatever it is. But they've been in the minority in the legislature, and they've been frustrated and angry and think everything that's happening is wrong. And so, you know, once they had that supermajority and they didn't have to worry about a governor opposing them or vetoing things this year, it was, you know, let's get it done fast. And you know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that unless you think they're going really fast in the really wrong direction, which I do, but it has sort of been breathtaking in its speed. Although, having said that, it seems to me that over the last month or so, it has sort of, they get down to, you know, really crunch time in the legislature. It has slowed down. You've seen some differences with the Senate being a little more conservative, ready to go a lot faster, and Governor McCrory and the House seeming to hold him back some.
Well, Carter, from your standpoint, were you a little bit surprised, like some of us were, with the strength and speed with which the Republicans have taken charge of Raleigh?
Well, politics hardly ever moves with any strength and speed. So if you see anything moving at all, it's sort of a surprise. But I think that the heart of the difference between the Democrats and Republicans basically comes down over to the size and the role of government. And, you know, if you boil all these debates down, they kind of all come back and relate to that one fact. And the problem, I think, is that we've got sort of your typical modern political rhubarb going on. There's a lot of howling and finger-pointing and politicians posturing. And there's not much real debate here. Just a lot of mucky modern politics. And, you know, the growth of government is sort of a point in that, and that nobody, has really proposed anything to cut government. All they're doing is cutting the growth in government. I saw some numbers, and I probably got these off a little bit, but, you know, the projections were that state tax revenues over 5 years would grow $3.8 billion, and the Senate wanted to limit that to $2.8, and the House wanted to limit it to $3.2, and the governor wanted to be revenue neutral. None of that really got debated. Instead, we just had a brawl. So I think the bigger problem is just the mess in our politics today, and we're certainly not unique in that regard.
Well, Carter, we're talking politics, but in terms of a basic understanding of how government works, doesn't government need to expand as the population size increases? I mean, isn't that something that even conservative Republicans would understand, that if you keep your budget the same as your population grows, you've essentially cut your budget?
Yeah, well, that's essentially the debate that needs to happen. You know, the size of government in North Carolina in the last 10 years doubled. That was a pretty healthy growth rate. And it's going to continue to grow under any of the plans proposed. The question is, should it grow 2.8 million or 3.2 million or billion or 3.8 billion or more? That's the debate. And that never really happened. I mean, instead, we had a howl from the Democrats about terrible cuts and a howl back from the Republicans about, wanting to cut and reform taxes. But the issue of, okay, how much growth is enough? How much spending is enough? Never really got debated.
So, I mean, now, Carter, are you saying that as a conservative Republican, you're disappointed that the Republican-controlled legislature did not really deal with the main issue on the minds, I mean, really a passionate issue on the minds of folks who really want to limit government?
I'm not disappointed. I think, in fact, they have limited the growth of government to some extent. But I think as a conservative Republican, I wanted a real debate about how much government is enough and how much we should limit and what the growth of government should be. And I don't think the debate ever focused on that. I think Phil Berger sort of made a stab at it at one point, but it all got lost in the howl.
I see.
I mean, there was just it's like in Washington, you know, they have a bill and they start posturing and finger-pointing, and everybody's just making political points. There's no real serious debate about what the policy ought to be.
Well, this is so fascinating for me. Just and let me push it just a little bit. Maybe Gary can help me a little bit. But, from my point of view, what I hear you saying is that Republicans can talk in general about the need to cut government. But when you get into a debate with the Democrats about whether or not you want to cut classroom aides or you cut the education budget or you do something that harms public schools by cutting their budget, you don't want to talk about that. You just want to, you don't want to talk about really doing too much in terms of cutting back on transportation, or you don't want to talk about, if you can avoid it, about cutting back on parks and recreation, because every one of these specific cuts has a constituency in the state, and if you debate those points, you start losing support. I mean, is that the dilemma that the Republicans faced and the reason that they didn't do what you wanted them to do, which was to have this debate about the size of government?
Well, that's always the dilemma Republicans face on cuts. But I think that what happened is they just got lost in the howl. And I think the first debate you need to have is increasing government. I mean, nobody's really talking about cuts in the big picture. Everybody's talking about, do we increase it X or Y? So it's going to get bigger any way you cut it. Now, after you have that debate and sort of get a consensus on, okay, here's enough growth, then you get down into questions about, okay, what do we do with education? Do we keep on the track we're on, or do we take a new track? If the track we're on worked, is there an alternative that might work better? And that gets to be a more controversial debate. But I think that the major point that's been missed is there really no overall cut in government anywhere.
We're visiting with Carter Wren and Gary Pierce. We're talking about the political situation in Raleigh, and we'll be back with both of them after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guests are Carter Wren and Gary Pierce. Carter Wren's best known in politics as being one of the lead political advisors for Jesse Helms, and Gary Pierce, of course, one of the leading political advisor for Governor Jim Hunt, and they met first when they were battling in 1984 in the U.S. Senate race, and they haven't changed their political views, but they have become good friends as they continue to debate the issues. And Gary, before the break, Carter Wren said, well, he was disappointed in the legislature that they just didn't go far enough in debating the real gut issue that Republicans feel strongly about, and that is about how big government ought to be. And I was sort of saying, yeah, you get in that debate and you're going to lose elections. I mean, what are the politics of the Republicans following Carter's advice and getting into this debate on cutting government?
You know, that's the debate I want Democrats to have and to engage in with Republicans. Although actually the Republicans are sort of having it with themselves because, as Carter said, the Senate wanted to go fairly far, but, you know, McCrory had taken this position, which it appears that he's now abandoned, that he wanted any so-called tax reform to be revenue neutral. But it's not revenue neutral. It does cut the growth, but it does not actually cut government. The real question is whether in a state as big as North Carolina you can really ever end up cutting the size of government. I remember when Governor Hunt first took office in 1977, we had about 5 million people. Today, North Carolina has about 10 million people. And the growth in government spending is primarily in two things. It's in health care, which they're having a continuing debate in Washington and an inability to get a handle on health care costs. And secondly, from a state level, it's education, spending money on education. And I think that the way that Democrats ought to debate this session and what's going on now is precisely that way. They may not be cutting the total amount on education, which would be impossible given the growth and how many kids there are in schools every year, but they are making early childhood available to fewer kids and taking teacher assistants out of classrooms. They've cut the university pretty seriously. They've cut community colleges pretty seriously. They're not going to raise teacher pay, or they're going to take away incentives like higher pay for master's degree or being certified. That's a winning debate for Democrats. And that's also, and one reason it's a winning debate is voters know and believe that's a very important decision we make about what the future of the state's going to be. And I think that's the biggest change we've had. We sort of had an article of faith in North Carolina for a long time that to do more in education, to pay teachers more, to have more teachers' aides, to have smaller class sizes, were good for the future. Well, I think the Republicans have a different view, and welcome to it. More power to them. But I think we ought to debate that view, and I think if we do, Democrats do it well, we'll get control of the legislature back.
Well, as Carter points out, however you frame the debate, it's not framed in the General Assembly. Are you talking about that kind of debate in the legislature or outside, or at Moral Mondays, or where?
You know, the debate is going on outside the legislature, but I think the point, and Carter will stop me from speaking from him, but I think the point Carter was making, you see it in Washington and Raleigh, is the way our politics works today, and it's a function of redistricting, it's a function of blogs, and not blogs as good as ours, but, you know, blogs and Twitter and just sort of the news environment. It drives everything to an extreme, and it becomes kind of a kabuki dance. I mean, everybody knows what the other side's going to say. I know what they're going to say on Fox News. I know what they're going to say on MSNBC, and everybody just sort of plays their part. And that plays out in the legislature. And so you have in the legislature, because of redistricting and the fluke of 2010 elections, Republicans have the votes to do whatever they want. And if they want to have debate, they can stand up and they'll, you know, make their arguments, their talking points. And if they get tired of listening to the Democrats, they'll just shut them down, you know. They'll cut off debate, call the question, and vote it through. And when you got the votes, you can do that. And they've got the votes. So I think the debate will have to happen, really. Where we want the debate is in the context of campaigns, political campaigns over the next 18 months.
Well, Carter, before we get to the sizing up maybe some of the potential campaigns, the debate that's not happening in the legislature is sort of happening out on the lawn in this phenomenon, really, the Moral Monday phenomenon, and the gathering and the discussions that are getting coverage about the different issues. I think my Democratic friends, you know, are heartened, most of them, by Moral Monday, but I sense that on the Republican side, people are saying, well, this is just grandstanding. This doesn't have any impact on the future of elections or the control of the North Carolina mind. I wonder, you kind of watch both sides, but how do you feel about the impact of Moral Mondays on North Carolina politics?
Well, I think you're right. It's mobilized the core activists in the Democrat Party, but I don't think Moral Monday has contributed to any sort of sensible political debate. I mean, I don't want to sound harsh, but William Barber is pure demagogue, and this isn't a debate. This is a political rant, and he's now just about the face of the Democrat Party in North Carolina and the voice of the Democrat Party. Now, DG, do you really want that?
Well, yeah, maybe that's the debate Democrats should have.
Let me jump in on that. I mean, I think Carter would like for him to be the face of the Democratic Party because he can be a divisive and a polarizing force. But one man's demagogue is another man's leader with courage and conviction. At least he's had the courage to stand up and say some things, and he's hit a responsive chord. I do think, to an extent, people talk past each other, and you either agree with that or you don't. Here's what I think is striking. And, DG, you had us on a couple of weeks ago, somebody had us on, and we were on with some folks with Moral Monday who were involved in the protest. And the thing that has struck me has been some of the pictures and the video of the people who get arrested. I remember there was a front-page picture in the NNO of a woman in a lab coat with a stethoscope around her neck. I think I heard I thought... From the picture, she was a doctor. I think she turned out to be some type of a technician. But what I think the impact is potentially is people who are in the middle, and that sliver of swing voters, which is disproportionately suburban women in North Carolina living in populous counties, look at that and they say, why is she so upset? What is going on that's got a woman who's a lot like me upset enough to get arrested, and they pay attention? And then I think, you know, we went through about a week where it was all abortion all the time, and I think that had an energizing effect. So I think Carter's right. There's a mobilizing, energizing element to this. Remember, in 2010, all the energy, all the protests were coming from the Tea Party, and then we had a very Tea Party-dominated election in 2010. I'm hoping this energy translates to next year.
Yeah, well, Carter, what do you think about that? Are you frightened a little bit about the power of this mobilization? Are you thinking, yeah, go ahead, make this is going to drive this Reverend Barber is going to drive supporters on the right and make them more solid in their beliefs and drive some people in the middle away from supporting some of the things they might otherwise have supported?
Well, the mobilization of the left wing of the Democrat Party troubles me a little bit politically, because anytime you get your core fired up in an off-year election, that's a plus for you. But let me try to reframe this a little bit, and then Gary can unframe it. Here's what I'm talking about. Gary made a point a minute ago about pre-K class sizes, teacher pay. And these are things that we need more of, and government should pay for more of. Now, that's a legitimate debate on a policy. And Jim Hunt articulated that debate for years. And it wasn't with a lot, there was some posture, but there wasn't a lot. It was a reasonable case that he made and laid out, and voters supported. Now, Republicans, I look at that policy and I say, well, that hadn't worked so well. Maybe we need to try some new things, like charter schools. And that's, I think, sort of where Republicans come down on this, that those policies haven't worked so well. Let's try some others. That's a real debate. Instead, what we've got is William Barber just trying to out-howl everybody and say, oh, what they're doing to the schools is terrible. It's awful. It's cruel. That's not really a debate. That's a howl. And if the theory is that howl reaches through the ether and the internet and people hear somebody hollering and it helps them a lot politically, I'm sort of inclined to think people hear so much of that kind of hollering in politics today, they just shut down. Just block it out.
Well, Gary, is it just howling and screaming in terms of what the result is? Or, I ask a question, Carter, you can criticize me because it might be trying to solicit the answer that, I mean, some of the Reverend's howling reflects some reality in terms of the allocation of resources by the General Assembly.
Well, sure it does. And, yes, some people do see it as howling and screaming. And, you know, we're always talking to people who say, I'm so tired of hearing all this stuff, all the back and forth. But on both sides, and I'm not just talking about the Moral Monday folks, but I'm talking about Tea Party folks. These are people with sincerely held convictions and beliefs. And bless their hearts, they're willing to go out in public and stand up for it. A lot of us don't do that. And some people are even willing to get themselves arrested over it. I mean, whichever side they're on, I really admire that. Yes, there is a segment of Americans who are tired of it and turned off by politics and all. But these are important issues. And one reason people feel so impassioned about it is they are important. They do care and feel deeply about it. But, you know, the challenge we always have in a democracy is we get fired up and emotional and angry and all that. The challenge is always, well, but can we have sort of a reasonable discussion on facts and philosophy that we take to the voters and win? And ultimately, that's what campaign's about. So, you know, it probably sounds self-serving for me and Carter to say this as political consultants or operatives or hacks or whatever people want to call us, but I think we do feel like in the context of a campaign, it's not because we're such nice people, but you really have to convert swing voters. We try to engage in that kind of debate and not just the howling that you see right now on cable TV and blogs, and the legislature are on the mall.
Yeah. We do need to take a break. I'm visiting with Gary Pierce and with Carter Wren, talking from different sides about the impact of current developments in Raleigh on politics in North Carolina, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guests are Gary Pierce and Carter Wren. If you joined us late, these are two of the most respected political consultants in Raleigh. Gary Pierce from the Democratic side, Carter Wren from the Republican side. We've been talking about some of the developments in North Carolina politics. Carter, how do you size up the next year and a half in terms of political opportunities and risk on both sides?
Well, you've got to step back a little bit from state politics to national politics, because that really dominates all the political trends now. And I think that in terms of national politics, the Democrats are probably getting a little bit of a trend their way. And I think that Washington is, politics is more screwed up than Raleigh. And the Republicans have had their problems articulating their message. And I think Obama has been fairly good in articulating his message. So I'm sort of at this point looking at the next election, and I'm looking at Washington and saying it seems to me the Democrats are getting a little more traction than the Republicans. So I'm sort of inclined to think, to the extent there's a trend this next election, it may be towards the Democrats. You had two straight elections where the trend was to Republicans in a big way in North Carolina. I think that may shift back this election. It's too early to tell whether it's a huge trend or a little trend, and it could reverse. But right now, I think Obama is sort of winning the national political debate a little bit, and that's a big help for the Democrats. That's a lot more important in North Carolina than most of the stuff going on in the legislature.
Gary, do you agree?
Well, I kind of do. I'm almost speechless.
Well, you know,
you know one of the great things about being old, E.G., is you see things that you feel like you've seen before. And this to me, looks like the flip side of what the 80s were like, when there was a Republican president in office who looked like, you know, no matter how much they tried, we tried to demonize him from the other side, looked like a reasonable guy. So I think you've got a president today who's a Democrat who the other side tries to demonize, but most Americans look at him and they say, well, whatever faults he has, he's a reasonable guy. Makes a lot of sense. But the out party, it was the Democrats in the 80s, today it's the Republicans. I think the dominant theme about them is that they've been taken over by a really very, very conservative, very extreme philosophy that is determined to, you know, root out anybody who doesn't do it. And they are seen as very extreme on things like abortion, on cutting government, on whatever it may be, and to the point of being either obstructionist in Washington or in Raleigh being destructive. So I think that's the what Carter's right about is I think national politics drives everything today, and it's going to drive next year's election. And if we knew which way that river's flowing next year, we know which way the election will go. Well, right now, I think that, you know, it is flowing in the direction of the Democrats.
Well, Gary, what impact will? Let's talk about some of the elections that will be in front of us. The number one statewide race, maybe the
Senate,
only
sure.
is the U.S. Senate race, and Senator Kay Hagan is an incumbent, finishing her first term. How do you see the trend that Carter points out, plus the other factors in North Carolina politics that might have an impact on that election, as you can see it now 18 months away?
Well, Senator Hagan looks to me pretty strong. I mean, she's got money. She's I think she's seen as a centrist. She's not necessarily seen as a left-wing Democrat. So Republicans will try to paint her that way, but just her whole her persona, her record, everything about her, she ran a good campaign before. She'll probably do it again. Republicans look a little divided now. The one who gets the most attention, because he's in Raleigh, is Tom Tillis, and he seems to be struggling a little bit, struggling with money. The Washington Republicans sent down an operative here to try to find an alternative to him. There are clearly some divisions within. I mean, they'll eventually pick a candidate and unite. But to me, the big thing is, will Republicans nominate somebody like a McCrory, who has at least a moderate image and won't scare off swing voters and moderate voters? Or are they going to swing hard right like they have in some states and nominate sort of a Tea Party extreme candidate, you know, make some ridiculous statement about rape or pregnancy or whatever, who scares off swing voters and helps? So you got that factor. But really, Carter's right. The big factor is which way is the river going to be flowing?
Let me go back a minute. What you've got politically today is Democrats polarize, Republicans polarize. The whole war politically is with the independent voter. They decide the elections. And So Obama is not phenomenally popular because Republicans are polarized against him. But I think my point is that trend-wise, I think he's doing better with the independents than the Republicans are. And I think that basically boils down to he has done a better job of articulating his case to people. He's an articulate spokesman. And I think the sequester, you know, is sort of an example of a missed opportunity by Republicans. The sequester didn't really cut spending. Here again, we're talking about a limit and an increase, and it wasn't even a huge limit. But I think Obama essentially won that debate, and the Republicans never really got on track with their case. So I think that's the little trend you've got with Hagan. You know, what all the polls seem to say to me is that the Republicans are not with Hagan, the Democrats are against him, against her, and the Democrats are for her, the Republicans are against her. And the independents, there's a little lean to Hagan there, but they're up for grabs. And I think that essentially that election is going to be close for a long time. And at some point, those independents are going to break one way or the other, and that'll decide that election.
What are the strengths and weaknesses of the potential candidates, including Speaker Tom Tillis?
Are you asking me or Gary?
Yeah, I am asking you. And I tell you what, I'd really like to rephrase that question, because what I wanted to get you to comment on Gary's idea that the Republicans, at least there's a prospect that the Republicans will, as they have done in other states, nominate somebody who's pretty far out, say in the Tea Party movement, or you know, pretty far to the right, so that the person might scare away these moderate voters that you're talking about, or whether they would nominate a McCrory type moderate, so-called moderate type Republican. You've sometimes said, excuse me for, but what you sometimes helped us understand that sometimes it helps to get a polarizing figure who motivates. And that, so I'm just, how do you see things now? I mean, what do you, in the context of this race?
Well, I think that's a little bit of a false framing. I mean, you know, look, if your question is, if the Democrats nominate a reasonable person and the Republicans nominate a fool, who wins? Well, I would have to say you're probably going to elect the reasonable person. But when you frame it as, well, the Republicans are going to nominate an extremist and the Democrats are going to nominate a moderate and so forth and so on, I'm not sure your framing quite works there.
Why not?
Well, I seem to remember Jesse getting elected 5 times.
Yeah, me too. Helped him. And it didn't, some of us on the other side thought, oh, yeah, guy, he is so extreme, he'll be rejected. But it didn't work. He instead of the moderates rejecting him, he mobilized an incredible support from his base.
And, well, it wasn't just from his base. I mean, you know, I think that, Gary, you're probably going to disagree. But I think if you had a real debate on limiting the size of government, Republicans can win that debate. Maybe they lose it, but they can win that debate. And I don't think it's extreme right wing to make that case. And so if the Republicans nominate a candidate who goes out there and says, you know, we need to start limiting the size of government, I think that's a good debate to have, and I think it's a debate Republicans can make a case for and win. So that doesn't strike me as, you know, extreme right wing.
All right. Well, listen, I tell you what, we're in the middle of a debate here that I have to interrupt with because we do need to take a quick break. We're visiting with Carter Wren and with Gary Pierce. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Carter Wren and Gary Pierce. We're talking about elections, and we've been talking about it in the context of the Senate race, and we've got a little differences of perspectives here. Gary, do you want to talk about the Senate race or just the situation in general?
Well, on the Senate race, to Carter's point about a debate on the size of government, that demonstrates an important difference. That's about Washington. And, you know, you look historically, Republicans in North Carolina have an edge in Senate races. Typically, what happens is, at least in the modern era, Republicans either win comfortably and Democrats win closely. It's always that way. They've got an edge. Because, as Carter says, part of the debate becomes the size of the federal government in Washington, which people do feel is too big and too bloated and too distant. So that's to the Republicans' favor. But they see state government, they see Raleigh, it's more things that they feel directly, like education and roads and so forth. So they do have, that debate probably does help them on a Senate race, not so much on a, say, legislative or governor's race.
That's what you guys both learned in terms of Jim Hunt's ability to win sometimes landslide elections in running for the governor's race and not able to do the same thing on a debate on similar issues in a Senate race.
Well, that's what, you know, that's what we did learn something when Carter beat us in the Senate race. We said, well, we're not so good at that. We do know how to run for governor. Let's go do that again.
I'm glad.
Guys,
I don't want y'all running for Senate anymore. Hunt ran enough.
We've only got a minute or two left, and one of the things that I'm interested in, the lore in North Carolina is that the Republicans are in charge for 10 years because of redistricting. But if they're in charge for 10 years because of redistricting, they'll be in charge, if they're going to be in charge of districting when it comes time to redistrict again. So they're in charge for 20 years. Is there any way that either of you see that Democrats have any prospect of ever controlling the legislature again in the foreseeable future?
D.G., I'll jump in real briefly, but Carter's probably better. I hear that a lot, but I also hear from some people who are smart about this that the margins are too thin. The state is too close, and you look at individual districts that a swing in moderate voters and swing voters could, sooner than a lot of people think, flip the legislature. But Carter is probably much more knowledgeable about that than I am.
Not really, but I basically agree with you that you know, the Republicans get an edge because of redistricting, just like the Democrats did for years. But that said, the Republicans won in 2010 in Democrat districts. So redistricting is not a lead pipe cinch. And if you get a strong trend for Democrats, like Republicans had in 2010, I think Democrats could retake the legislature. In other words, it's a tilt. But you deal with tilts in politics, and I think it's possible Democrats could win the legislature.
Carter, this is interesting, and I don't want to put you in the position of giving hope to a lot of Democrats who don't have much hope about that, but is that something that could conceivably or realistically happen this year if the trends continue to favor the Democrats?
If you had a strong trend. In 2010, you had a huge trend to Republicans. You had something like that for Democrats. A lot of seats would come into play that aren't normally into play. Now, the other piece, DG, is the Democrats have to straighten out their fundraising. The big problem they have in addition to the districts is the Republicans are outraising them substantially, and you can't get a message out if you can't raise the money to pay for that message.
Amen to that, brother.
That's the other big hole in the Democratic boat.
There, as much as some of us admire and love the participants in Moral Mondays, they haven't brought their pocketbooks with them yet, and haven't brought their large bank accounts and stock portfolios yet. But the Republicans were able to raise money by a very few people who had that kind of commitment. Maybe the Democrats can look for that as well.
There's plenty of money in this state, DG.
Well, guys, y'all have been wonderful. Again, as I always do, I learn so much from you guys, but the main thing is I learn how much I don't know and how much I need to talk to you even more regularly to keep up to date. I thank you both for sharing your wisdom with me and with folks here in Chapel Hill, and look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Thank you, DG.
My guests have been Gary Pierce and Carter Wren, and thanks to them, of course, and thanks to you for listening. I'll be back here before you know it.